Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2555. That's 2555. We're going to have a wonderful guest on tonight. She goes by Dr. Purpose, and her name is, now, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it looks like Ladira Korn. Is that correct? Yes?
That's correct.
Very pretty name. Very pretty name. And she's from Texas, and she had a very rocky childhood. Now, I'm not going to read her bio, because what we do on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays is we have people come on, they tell her their story, and we do have a panel, and it is starting to load up here. Yes, you bring people on, you sure. And what we do is we do go to the panel, you know, maybe two times or three times towards, you know, during the show. I think I had written you all about that. But just for the people who are listening, the ones that are on the computers or listening on the phone, just listening to the show, this is how we run the show. So the first thing I'm going to do before I bring our guests on is I'm going to read the mission statement. We do this especially on Fridays. It gives you an idea of what we do, and it's only an idea. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do it two different ways. Number one is educating the public, very important, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic. It's a worldwide problem. We know this. It's not just in our country. It's all over the place. Okay. And then number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I'm very heavy into the prevention part. But anyway, I want people to know that the our website is www.NASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. Because if you just go to that, there's a wealth of information, a lot of links to open up, and you can learn a lot. When I go out and do my presentations, certainly not this year because of the COVID, but I use a lot of information right from our own website, and it's always updated and very good to know. So anyway, let's go to our guest now. To our guest, she's great. You want me to call me Dr. Purpose? Or you want me to call you Ladira?
Dr. Purpose.
Okay. All right. And maybe you'll start out by telling your story, and we'll go from there. At times, I will stop you, you know, so because we do have a panel here, and you know, have them, they might have a question or maybe they want to make a comment, okay? And that livens up the show, too, and maybe even adds more information. You never know. People can always identify many times with the guests that we have on, okay? And that's a good thing, so they don't feel alone.
Okay.
This is one way we help NASCA. Yeah. So go ahead. Start out by telling you a story. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Dr. Purpose. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me on today to tell my story, to get my story out. And I hope my story be a blessing to many others that are dealing with domestic violence, child molestation, child abuse. It kind of all wrapped together if you really understand what child abuse is and domestic violence, child molestation. Basically, I always like to call it a spirit. You literally connect with the same type of spirit. And my child abuse, sexual molestation started at the age of 1 year old. I wasn't aware of it until I got a little older and was told. But I do remember at the age of 3 years old being molested, taken to school, pulled on the side of the road, this person having sex with me and taking me to kindergarten. I was always told not to tell anyone. I would get in trouble. My mother could kind of tell what was going on based on the way I would walk. And so I suffered with a lot of illnesses as a young child. Even sometimes I deal with the same illnesses far as, you know, personal, dealing with your personal, how I would say, your personal anatomy or, you know, things like that, woman issues. And from there, I think around the age of 9, my mom became very abusive. I would say it was more verbal abuse at first, calling me out of my name. And when you're in love with someone or you see someone abusing you, sometimes we're so young we don't even identify it as abuse. And I always say that what was so functional to me, I now know that it's dysfunctional. And so I had to live that life. And my mom was the type of person that really didn't give me that push to, you know, make it to my purpose, or she didn't see the greatness in me. I could say basically she was a narcissistic type of personality. Everything was about her. I don't think she had any empathy for anything that I was going through. I really couldn't talk to her or talk to others. And then the psychological abuse came in, and then there was the physical abuse. The most damage to me, I think, was more of the psychological, because even though she's no longer living, I'm still trying to be healed from the psychological. I tell a lot of people, as I speak to people, the psychological is one that probably carries on longer, even if you're out of the physical abuse.
I agree with that. Sometimes I'd rather be hit than listen to the words being said. You know
exactly.
What I'm saying by that?
Yeah.
And I understand that all too well, you know. And there's so many of us that have mother issues, you know, on the show. I mean, our parents are supposed to nurture us. They're supposed to be kind to us, guide us, you know, give us boundaries and all these other things. And so often we are the ones, you know, that just simply don't get it. We don't get what we need.
Right.
And then we have to grow ourselves up. Yeah. So go on a little bit more, and then I'll bring in the panel.
And then from there, I thought abuse was literally acceptable. I even, as I was thinking about preparing for this show, I started thinking about some of the things that I did in early relationships, and I found pleasure in guys talking to me out of my name, or even physically just trying to start a argument, or wanting them to hit me. And it's something that I, you know, just realized that I had, you know, provoked, I would say, people, you know, gentlemen to hit me, because I guess I felt that that's what love felt like. That's what love was, you know, it was okay to feel the anger. As I got older, where I am now, I realized that that's part of my love language, is to let people, you know, acknowledge who I am. And, you know, I need to hear that, you know, you're doing a great job and, you know, things are okay. Because even, like I said, that psychological part, my mother is gone, but I'm still living that life. Like, Mom, I hope you're happy. I hope you're happy of the success that I'm living, because it seems like I still owe her that, or I still want her to be happy, because that was something that she never really said to me out of her mouth. You know, so when somebody's gone, you still long for that. You still want that peace, you know, or that understanding from that person that you feel that victimized you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's very true. You know, we're always looking. Sometimes we please. We do it the best that we can to try and please that person. We think we are anyway. And it doesn't work because we're never doing enough, or it's not good enough, or whatever the case might be. So I understand that. You know, a lot of us go through that.
Right.
You know, I would try too, because I have mother issues. And, you know, she never told me she loved me, not once, until the almost the day she died. She was on the gurney in the hospital, and she was too weak to speak, but she was mouthing,
right,
"I love you," and I didn't feel anything. It was
right.
Too late. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went through the mechanics of taking care of her, but there was no emotional ties at all. Because you see,
yeah,
when we're growing up as children, and you know this, we need that love feeling, and
exactly,
guidance and all the normal things. And when it's too late, it's too late. So don't ever feel guilty about that, you know, if you don't have the right feelings or whatever, because they didn't have the right feelings towards us. I just want to get that out there. Let me go to the panel, okay? And you've started off well so far, and you're doing a fine job. And I think people can already identify with you. Look at me. Okay, let's go to Bob Eden. Bob, say hi. Say hi to Dr. Purpose. Bob, are you there? Well, his mic is open. I don't know. Maybe he took a walk. I don't know what he did. I can't tell. Let's go.
I'm here.
Well, he'll come back. Are you there?
There.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, there
sorry.
You are.
Down here in Australia, we don't say hi. We say, "G'day, mate. How you going?" And the other caveat to that is, "No worries, mate." So, yeah. So I'm glad to be here. And my belief is that we're all we're all sovereign, unique, and equal.
Wow.
And the best that anybody can do is just to share their own truth, their own story, but to realize that their own truth is only valid for them.
Right.
So I will never speak for anybody else but me. But what I love about NASCA is it provides a platform to share, for everybody to share their own truth. And through that mechanism, by everyone sharing their own truth, we have an opportunity to heal each other.
That's right.
So, yeah, so we're all warriors. And my life is awesome, you know, but, you know, I face my own death probably about a dozen times in my life, and that's what makes me appreciate every breath I take.
That's
because
correct.
if you've never faced your own death, how can you really appreciate life? And if you are not creating your life, who is? So good on you, darling. And all we can do, well, no, I'll correct that, because I cannot speak for we. But all that I can do is to simply let my own light shine. And
right.
Through that shining light, that attracts other people. So
that's cool.
My message to everybody is just look into your heart, have the courage to find your own truth, and share it. And totally disregard political correctness, because that's a load of bollocks. And I'm looking forward to you. I'm just looking forward to you sharing your own truth, knowing that your own truth is only valid for you.
That's correct.
Thanks, darling.
Okay.
Oh, shut up.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad you got back to the phone. Okay.
So
I'll put you on hold. Right. Okay, honey. All right. We'll get back to you. I have a 318 area code. Who am I speaking to?
This is Pamela.
Oh, Pamela. Okay. Once in a while, I'll get this out yet. Sorry about that, Pamela. Okay, I'll put you on safe. Okay, there you go. Say hi to our guest. Well, I think you've already spoken to her. So say hello to her. She likes to go by Dr.
Purpose.
Yeah. Right.
Hi, Pamela.
Dr. Purpose.
Hi. How
are
you doing,
good
Pamela?
Good to hear your voice. It's good to
right
hear
here.
Your voice. I'm glad you come on.
Thank you for Pamela. Coming on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just want to say, you know, thank you for the courage to come on. Thank you that you're going to share, you know, what you've gone through and, you know, what you endured and what you've recovered from and, you know, how you've recovered and what you've done with it since then. And I just want you to relax and take some deep breaths. You know, we're here for you to support you and just do what you need to do to make yourself, you know, feel like you're happy to come on here.
Oh, I'm
happy
excited.
To be
here. I'm excited.
I can hear your excitement. I can hear it.
Thank you.
We're delighted to have her. All right, thank you for that, Pamela. Okay, I'm going to put you on hold so we have no interference tonight because sometimes, you know, there's too much. Okay, now we have Deborah also. Deborah, say hi to Dr. Purpose.
Hello, Dr. Purpose. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening.
Thank you for being
I'm doing
here.
Great. Thank you.
You've already hit on questions, and I will give you the hard-hitting questions. That's what I do here at ASCA. I do ask some questions that maybe not be comfortable for some people, but from what I'm hearing, I think you're ready to talk about these very serious
yeah.
questions. And
yes.
The thing that I know Carol is very well aware that we are both on the same kind of page. When you said you were talking about your mother, about no empathy and her psychological issues and abuse became acceptable at some point,
right.
I do completely understand that. I'm trying to understand it more now that my story's coming out more. I would love to hear more about that, if the rest of the panel would love to hear that. And I would love to hear the rest of your story. But I just want to sit here and say, the second you said that the abuse was acceptable, you got my number right there. So I would
wow.
love to speak more on that, Dr. Purpose, just because I heard something in there that I think Carol and I could both hang on to. And Carol and I are very close, but we also can speak honestly and openly about these things. So I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you're already open and honest about all of this. So thank you so much for being here. I can't wait for the rest of the show.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, thank you so much for that, Deborah. And that's so true. We have many a conversation, she and I. And, you know, we survivors, we what we do is we hold each other up and we also help other people. That's what we do. And, you know, through presentations, through radio shows, through books that we write. And I know that you've written many books. We're going to get to that. We don't have to get there yet. I think what Deborah just said is a good idea, you know, just to continue on, please, with your story. Because, you know, speak about how it affected you. Like, did it affect you in school? Did you have friends? Did you feel bad about yourself? Did you know you were different? When did you know you were different? See, there's all kinds of questions they ask. So go ahead and any one of those you want to address, go ahead.
Okay, I can kind of start off. I'm a psychology major, and not only that, I'm a prophetess, so I'm a minister. And I love how God uses the two. So even though I've been through abuse, God always takes me to the root of the issue. So speaking on my mom, it's hard to forgive. It's hard. I remember when my mom took ill, and as a prophetess, I seen her death at the age of 4 years old. She didn't pass away until I was 36, which was on December the 13th. My birthday is on Christmas. That's coming up. I'll be 50 this year. And I remember I was working for Children's Protective Services, and it's so amazing how God would put you back in the environment in which you came out of. And so I remember going to college saying, oh, I'm going to be working for CPS. And you know how we talk about speaking those things that be not as though they were. I would always speak things literally into existence. And so with my mother, I remember one day driving as an investigator, and it basically all hit me all at one time. And I realized that here I was. I had to take care of the very person who hurt me, and I thought I was healed. You know, we could have a conversation. I could be okay with it. But I really wasn't healed in the inside. And a lot of times we portray that we're healed because we can still, you know, communicate with that person. Or I had this weird love for my mom. You know, I had this desire to love my mom. But when she took ill, it seemed like I had so much hatred. I didn't have that feeling of, you know, oh, I care if she lived or if she died. But as a minister, I had to understand that it wasn't about my mom's physical body or how she treated me. It was more so about her soul that was at stake, and how God was able to use me to speak to my mom to make sure that she accepted Jesus Christ as her Lord and Savior before she passed away. And that's really the moral of anybody's story that is in ministry, and why God allows us to go through different aspects or events in our life. And we sit back and we try to question him, why did you allow me to go through molestation before the age of one? And this is me beating my own self up. I think a lot of us can relate to that. We beat our own self up when we go through abuse, especially child abuse, wondering what is so unperfect about me. So everything, as even now as an adult, I deal with, I guess I would say I'm a professionalism. I'm a professionist. And not only that, I have OCD. And so I recognize some of the signs came from being a child or even being a teenager, just going from one relationship, an abusive relationship, into one that I end up marrying someone for 13 years who's my children's father, not realizing those personalities that they had, you know, the very aggressive personalities. Now, one thing about me is I love to get to the root, and a lot of people think that I have telepathy, you know, which is I can read the mind, but I really can't. But I love the study of the mind. That fascinates me to understand why people do what they do or why are we like we are. And so I would always break down things, because I didn't want my mom to get away with, you know what I'm saying? You hurt your child. She didn't just hurt me. She hurt my sister. And come to find out later on that my brothers felt some sense of hurt. But one thing I can remember her telling me growing up, things like, you know, I should have never had you. I hate you. I wish you was dead. And calling me all out of my name and things like that. So when people see me now, they don't see what I go through on the inside. They really look right. They think they're looking at a very confident woman until I'm telling them I'm very self-conscious. I don't like the way I look. And see, I'm telling you the story about my mom, but I had a father. I still have a father. My dad is still living. And there were times my dad was just the opposite. He was used to telling me, and I didn't realize I did this until I got older, but I would ask my dad, Dad, am I pretty? Does this look good? You know, did I do a good job? And I realized I carry those same traits. Almost 50 years old, here I am asking my husband those same questions. In other words, right. I think I'm still looking for that acceptance that my mom didn't give me. But you know what I'm saying? But we end up trying to find that, we search through other people to find what we did not receive when we was a child. And so I think everything to me comes from addressing the root of an issue, because we'll never find out the solution to a problem until we can get to the root of the problem. And that's where I'm so good at that. I'm so good at taking things and saying, God, okay, I need you to teach me how to break this thing. And so what I had to do with my mom was I had to go evaluate her own life, you know, go through her path and look at her struggles. And one thing she would tell me and my sister was that she didn't want any girls. And we couldn't understand that she favored her boys. But as I got older and I started realizing, my mom was always telling me stories about her life growing up. And in those days, there was so much segregation. And she was, you know, I guess I can say she was segregated in her own household, because my great-grandmother was a Frenchman who was basically Caucasian and black. And so my grandmother married a dark-skinned man. And my mother felt neglected or rejected from her grandmother. Any of the children that was dark-skinned, she didn't like those children. But all of the light-skinned children, she showed preferential, or, you know, she approved of those. So when I go back to my mom's past, I'm like, oh, my God, look what she had to deal with. But in those days, they couldn't talk about things that was really hurting them. They couldn't talk about, you know, this is what my grandmother is saying to me. She couldn't openly talk to my grandfather or my grandmother about her own pain. So that was her reasoning for saying, I don't want girls, because I think in her mind, she didn't want her girls to go through what she had to endure in life. And that's what I think many of us do. Yes, we go through the abuse, but a lot of times it's when we become parents, a lot of times we're trying to shield our children or protect them from making the same mistakes or going through the same things that we had to endure as a child. And sometimes we can either be over-aggressive or sometimes we can be over-protective. We just have to know how, ask God for the guidance on how to be a godly parent to our children, raising them up in the correct way, that we don't scar them. Because a lot of times, the very person we say we don't want to be, we end up becoming. We end up pulling some of those traits. And I call them learned behavior. I call them generational curses. And, you know, I can really, you know, go deep with things. And that's what I try to tell people. A lot of things that we deal with, yes, we're looking at the physical realm, but a lot of things are really spiritual. And you have to look at things spiritual, because that's how everything is operated. Because everything that is negative, what the word of God speaks, has to become from the realm of what the enemy, you know, have possessed inside of us. So we have to really be careful, know, you know, what that demon is and what is that called. What is abuse? And a lot of people don't even know what the definition of abuse. And, yes, I do have a story, and I go around, I tell my story. I've written several books. And I like to tell people we all have a story. We all are overcomers that have been able to overcome it. But do you really understand that just about all of us have been the abuser and never realized that we were abusing someone? Because abuse is basically just power and control. And I know everybody on this panel can say we all wanted some form of control. If you've been abused, we always want possession of our own life. I don't want anybody to tell me what to do. I want to be able to do it my way, you know. And so sometimes it's hard to take instructions from somebody else when you've been abused, because you feel like, I have a voice, I want to speak my own voice, but I've never had that opportunity to do that because I was so sheltered or so abused.
That's right. Well, so often when we were children, we didn't have a voice. We didn't, you know. And a lot of times, I was always the oddball. Okay,
yeah,
that's the way I am. And, you know, I knew that what was happening to me, because my abuse started, the sexual abuse started when I was 6, and lasted until I was well into my teens. And, you know, and it was in the family and outside of the family, too. I had it both.
Right.
And I knew I never, ever, ever blamed myself. CPS was involved in my family also. They saw things they didn't like when I was kidnapped and raped in New York. And they got a hold of CPS. I had a wonderful CPS worker. I'm going to tell you that. She took me to my bedroom. Yes, let me tell you, and this is years ago. She made me strip down, And my mother was present. She wanted to see if I had bruising on me, things like that,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't. So not at that point anyway. I wish I'd seen her later on. But anyway, the point is this. She took me aside and she said to me, Carol, I just want you to know. Now, you started when I was 6. I was kidnapped and raped when I was 9, so or 8 actually,
wow.
in New York. But she said, none of the things that have happened to you was ever, ever, ever your fault.
Right.
And I don't want you to think ever, ever that it was your fault.
Right.
Okay. So that made me feel so much better because my mother was making it like it was my fault, my so-called, and I will say so-called bio father. I found out years later it wasn't my father. DNA is great. But anyway, the point is they made me feel like it was my fault. And then the CPS worker came along, and she was a very good one. Okay. Now, you don't hear very mm-hmm. many stories that CPS workers or DIFAS or any of those others are good, you know. So I just want people to know that there are some CPS workers or DIFAS or whatever out there that are very good. Yes.
Right.
So, you know, that helped me psychologically. Okay, it made me tougher. It made me feel better about me because
right.
what happens, and I'm sure you can identify with this, all survivors of child abuse, whether it be physical, mental, emotional, sexual, a lot of times they all go together, neglect. We suffer so from low self-esteem. This is why you went to your father for approval. Do I look okay? Am I pretty?
Right.
Now, I have a question for you. Yeah. Now I have a question for you. I have all this. I've worked many places. I understand all this. When you were a teenager and so forth, did you get into alcohol and drugs or anything like that? Like many of us have.
No, I didn't. I thank God I'm almost 50 and I still don't drink. I don't curse. I don't smoke. But I had
mm-hmm.
other sins. I think I was very promiscuous because of the sexual
mm-hmm.
abuse. And
right.
But other than that, no, I didn't do any of those things. And I really thank God. And I really think it had so much to do with the calling that was on my life. My mom used to call me, you know, how they describe you and say, oh, my God, like I was so outspoken. And she would call me, oh, my God, you're so bad, you're so bad. But God had to reveal to me, it wasn't the fact that you was bad. It was the fact that you were so set apart and called, and your mom didn't know what to do with you. And
mm-hmm.
so that's what I thought about myself for so long, that, oh, my God, I was considered that bad child or that black sheep of the family, when actually I was the one that God had actually chosen, you know,
mm-hmm.
to be who I was. So I tell a lot of people, even in ministry now, because they find it strange, you know, you don't drink, you don't curse, or you don't do this and that. And I'm like, no. So, no, I didn't use things that I know that people, you know, as a psychologist, I know people will, you know, use to try to, you know, suppress whatever they're going through. So use some type of alcohol or something like that. And I think the reason why I didn't do a lot of those things is because I'm so transparent. I talk about the things that go, I'm totally different. I can't hold water. That's what they used to call it. She can't even hold water. So I have
mm-hmm.
to tell stuff, and you can tell even at my young age, my innocence, when my family members were having sex with me, I would write things on my grandparents' house, you know, words that really wasn't supposed to be spoken by a child. So literally it was like I was so innocent, I thought it was okay to say these particular words and things like that. But there was never an adult, instead of telling me right from wrong, protecting
mm-hmm.
me, they, I guess I would say they disciplined me unnecessarily. So that's where it came in, especially in the black community. We dealt with that so much, and even now, if you can hear a lot of people talking about us in this pandemic, as of now, we're talking more about the mental illness, because a lot of black people, they really don't go to see the psychiatrist. I have to see the psychiatrist every 3 months, and I've been under psychiatrist since 2012. Even though I went to school for this stuff, I have to deal with, you know, the thoughts that's in my own mind that still tell me, oh, you're still ugly, or you're still not good enough.
you know, mm-hmm. and I have to try to, you know, mm-hmm. I still feel like I need that approval sometimes. I don't know if it's considered, I don't want to be, what would I call that word, like so arrogant or,
think I'm all bad. Your mother was telling you certain things that brought you down. I mean, to this day, well, like when I'm out in the store or something, if there's a mirror nearby, I don't want to look in that mirror. I might see something I don't like, you know. And that came from my mother always making me feel like I was less than. And she would make, give other people so much attention that was favorable. And with me, just like with yourself, it would be less than, and she never made me feel pretty. I got that from other people telling me that I was pretty, but never my mother. So that's mm-hmm. why you went to your father. But at least you mm-hmm. had your father who could, tell you that you looked fine and so forth. I'm thankful for that. I really am.
I will say something about my father that I had to learn. I lost two younger brothers, one in 2018, and then the year later, a year and 9 days apart, I lost my two younger brothers. And I remember God gave me the opportunity to talk to my dad, and I was able to ask my dad, which a lot of people don't do that. We don't talk to, you know, our abusers or our parents and, you know, about the things that we've endured. And I knew I needed to be healed. I knew I needed some real self-healing that was really, you know, hindering my walk. And so I had the opportunity to talk to my dad, and I asked him, I said, Dad, when Mom used to be in a room beating me and I was in the closet and I would be calling your name and screaming out and all this kind of stuff, and my dad said, I said, why didn't you ever come in there and stop her? And he said, because I was just as afraid of her as you were. And I understand that my dad was being abused as well as a male. He wasn't used to that. But as I get older, God is telling me, but you know what? But you can't give your daddy a pass. Your dad was there. He was supposed to be your protector. There was no reason for him not to stand up to your mom. You know, this is their child. They created you. He should have been, you know, he should have spoke up for me, because now I started realizing that I look for those same patterns and the men or relationships that I have been in. I look for somebody to protect me, and if you don't protect me, I'm going to defend myself. And so that may come off as being, oh, she's aggressive, or, you know, she talks too much or whatever, or she say how whatever she wants to say. You know, I learned I had to defend myself because I did not have anyone. There was no CPS at the time. We just had 911. I think we had zero. Back then, the operator just clicked the zero, and when I would call them to tell them about the abuse that was going on in my home with my mom, they would ask me, how old are you? I would say 17, and they would say, okay, well, you need to go back home. So it wasn't, you know, I thank God for CPS. I thank God for how the system worked, even though CPS is not the greatest. But I was an investigator, and I was that one that I got when I knocked on that door to go to a case. You know, the parents was like, who are you? You know, talking bad. But I had so much compassion for these people, and I would say, you know what, I'm no better than you. I went through this. I went through that. And so what I did was I would educate them and find out what was their faults or what were the things that they wanted to do. And that's how I started being called Dr. Purpose, because I started teaching people what their purpose was and how to find their purpose. And to know that they had a purpose in their life. God didn't create anything or anyone without a purpose.
I like that. I always speak to people differently, too. I understand where you're coming from. And a lot of what you're saying is the type of life that I lived, okay? And I was very angry with my stepfather because he'd watch my mother switch me. She'd tell me to go get a switch. And that's when I was opening up my mouth. I didn't want to clean up after my brother's messes, make him clean up his own mess. He was 5 years older than me. Okay? And I was getting pretty darn mad. All right? So at times, I'd say, no, I'm not going to clean up his mess. Go get a switch. Well, I learned that with the switch, if it had brown in it, that meant that the switch was almost half dead, right? So if when she hit my legs, she was hitting my legs, it wouldn't hurt as much, or maybe there wouldn't be welts, excuse me, welts this time. And then she caught on to what I was doing, and she went and picked her own switch. Yes, she did. And I walked around with many, many welts. And I can't tell you how many times I was hitting the head. If people want to x-ray my head, I tell them, don't bother. You're going to see something you don't like. Right. Leave me alone. You know, I don't want to know what's in there either. So I know what you're talking about. See, this is what we do on the show. There's so many people that are listening right now who can identify with your life, with my life, because our lives are so often not the same, but right. similar. Yes.
Right.
Let me go to the panel and see what they think. I'm going to go to Pam now, and Pamela, and let her ask you a question or two. Go ahead, Pamela.
Okay. You're doing good, Dr. Purpose. I really
thank you.
What you're saying really resonates. I mean, come on. You know, my mother was a narcissist. She worked in the bar 6 nights a week just to stay away from her kids. It was three of us girls. Yeah, and she married a pedophile. And so he had free reign with us, and I was sexually abused by him from the age of 4 to 18, and my other sisters weren't, but we were all emotionally, I mean, you know, just emotionally, physically.
Right.
It was like we was in a POW camp before that was even popular. And, you know, you can imagine he was a monster.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you know, just getting back to all the feelings. I mean, the repressed memories have to come back up. So what age were you when your mother, passed?
I was getting ready to turn 37. She died on December the 13th, which just passed in 2007. And when I look at my birth certificate, I'm a numbers person. One day I was looking at my birth certificate and I realized that I was born on Christmas Day, but at 12/13. So she died on 12/13, and I was born at 12/13. So I've seen the similarity in that. So it's been many years since she's been. So it's been 13 years since she passed away.
So did y'all have a conversation about your abuse before she passed?
No, we never had the conversation about her abuse. And when I would let people, you know, back then we had voicemail. Well, we have it now, but we had, you know, not all the technology that we had back then. But if my mom got mad at you, and my mom was that type of person, if she said something, she was going to do it. So she taught me how to fear her. So I was very fearful of my mom. You know, and I also wanted to respect her. But there's one thing that I noticed about myself just recently. When I was away from home, I would call my mom because, like I said, I loved my mom. And when I would call her, everybody that was in the background would say, "Watch this," and they would mimic how I would respond to my mom or how I would talk to my mom, and I would talk like a baby, and I would say, "Hey, Ma, how you doing?" I never realized that I was doing that until now, because I realize now a lot of times that we're stuck in that place where we were hurt at. And that's why I think when I say getting to the root, sometimes we're dealing with that little 9-year-old or, you know, that 3-year-old that's still hurt right there, you know. And so I guess when I would talk to my mom, wherever it was that she hurt me, began to hurt me, I was around 9 when she started the abuse with me. And so I think I would turn back into this little 9-year-old. I even remember on her deathbed, I'm going to rubbing her head, and at this time she's in her transformation. And so my aunt was saying, "You can talk to her; she can hear you." And I remember rubbing her head, and I went back into this little child voice, and I'm like, "Hey, Ma, I love you." So no, she never had the opportunity to tell me she was sorry or did we talk about it. But I promise you, my mom had a look. She had these beautiful eyes, and it was very, very glossy. And during the time, I feel like God gave her lung cancer where she wasn't able to talk, because that's how she would damage me, was with her words more so as I got older. And so at this time, she's not able to communicate. but she could communicate with her eyes. And no, she never told me she was sorry, but I remember looking in her eyes and I could see the pain of saying, you know, baby, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I put you and your siblings through. So, but other than that, no, we have never had that talk about it. But I talked to other people about, you know, what my mom did. And the story is still the same. Everybody's saying, are you sure that was your biological mom? You sure that's not your stepmom? And I was like, nope, that's my biological mom. So it's amazing.
So have you gotten closure? Like, you know, some people mourn, like, not being able to talk to the person. Does it bother you that she's gone now and you can't really have that? Or do you feel like with the eye contact thing, that was like closure for you with her?
No, let me tell you an incident that happened. I remember going to the beauty shop and I was getting my hair done, and it was close to Mother's Day. And I always tell that story about, you know, how my mom died, how she treated me, blah, blah, blah. And I always tell people, I said, she never told me she was sorry. And so one night I had a dream, and that's a lot of times how God speaks to me in dreams. And I remember my mom laying in the bed with me, and she was rubbing my head, and she gave me 3 kisses on my cheek. That very day, my dad was having his birthday party. So I went over there, and my dad ended up kissing me on my cheek, which was very rare. He kissed me on my cheek 3 times. So to me, that was like my mom can see me. You know, her spirit is still there, and she can hear me when I'm talking. And I think God said, look, you need to rectify that thing, because this girl is just damaging your name, or, you know, she's thinking about it. So with my daddy kissing me 3 times, like I seen in my dream, my mom doing it, that was my relief right there. That was my healing, that even though she's no longer here, God still worked that thing out, that I don't feel any more pain or I don't hurt anymore because of what my mom did to me. I am truly healed behind that hurt.
Sometimes I think the Lord gives us signs that the people are in heaven, because I remember going into a convenience store one time and this song was playing. It was the song that was playing at my grandmother's funeral, and I'm like, that's a sign, Jesus. She's in heaven waiting on me.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, I see we have a lot more for you to go with what you're doing now, and, you know, how you're healing, your healing is helping others, so.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And that's a wonderful thing. Thank you for that, Pamela. Yeah. I think, was she done? I don't know. Let me see. Hold on. I think she was done. I'm sorry. Were you done, Pamela?
Yes, ma'am, I was. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't want to chop her off there. I'm very much into God too, okay? Because if it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be here. Simple.
Oh yeah.
And quite frankly, all the people that abused me, there were so many. I'm not even going to go into that. This is ridiculous. But all the abuse that I had to go through in my life, it was too much for me. Okay, it just simply was. And I took it out in sports when I was in school, and I became a wonderful runner. And no one could catch me. I mean, none of the girls anyway. And I won awards and stuff for that. And then also, too, music. I had a piano in the house. And sometimes it wasn't nice piano playing. It depended on how I was feeling. You know, bang, bang, bang. You know. And then other times it was more classical, because it was that type of piano. It was a classical. I was trained on the best of pianos. So I played more classical music, even though I loved rock. I'm a teenager. I like rock. But I didn't play rock. I played classical. And that calmed me down. That would help calm me down. So I would find things in my life that would, help. And with my anger, I had so much anger against all these people. I wanted to get rid of them one way or another. Not nice. Because a couple of them tried to kill me. All right.
Right.
So, So one day I was walking around in circles, and I was saying, I want to punch this one. I want to hit that one. I want to twist that one's head around like the Exorcist. Okay. And all this other stuff. And then finally, I just fell to the ground. I fell to the floor inside the living room, to the floor, and out of sheer exhaustion of hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know what? I got up and I said, no more. No one was in the house. I made sure. You know, so I would have gotten beaten for one thing. But, you know, so I said, no more. No more hate. I could tell even then as a teenager that was wrecking my life. I was already into alcohol and drugs and nothing was helping. I was trying to get away with the pain and get that out of me.
Wow.
And, you know, I gave it to God. Lord, you're tougher and bigger than me, okay? And
wow.
I can't handle this, so I take all of that hate and I give it to you. And it didn't make me love them, these people, but I felt
right.
a lifting of hatred that came, that was inside of me, sort of like go away, like disperse.
Mm-hmm.
You know the word disperse?
Right.
You've done that before
right.
that I have, disperse. Okay, so it just left my body, dispersed, went elsewhere. And I can't even say that I can forgive them because they knew what they did. It's not
right.
as if it was even generational in my family. It wasn't generational. And my mother was treated like a princess, like a princess. And so I can't even put it there. But so I just say, God, take this from me. I can't handle it. I can't handle
right.
it anymore. And that's exactly what happened, okay? So you see, a
wow.
lot of what you're saying makes sense to me. And, you know, many, many, many of us do have the mother issues. I'm going to go to Deborah, and I know she might have something, a comment she'd like to make or something. Go ahead, Deborah.
Oh, absolutely. What a great conversation. Thank you so
mm-hmm.
much, Dr. Purpose,
yeah.
for this conversation, because I think it's very much needed, not just for myself, because I am trying to take this a little bit selfishly, I'll be honest, because I'm really appreciating everything you're saying. And a very personal note, I do have a few questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot on my list, but number one is when somebody says that you're so confident, but you're not, where did that come
mm-hmm.
from? And how did you get through that? Because I get that all the time. Deborah, you're so confident. Yes, I am. But you don't understand at what forbearance this is coming at me with. I still have to stand confident in front of other people.
Right.
Please tell me, where is that?
I think that's what basically what we call that mirror. That facade, that we have to portray that we're so confident, are we so assured, are we so perfect, and that's really not who we are. And that's not even how God wants us to be. He doesn't want us to be perfect, you know, and we have to understand that because when we were abused, that's what we always thought. Even a person that deals with obsessive compulsive disorder, that's why we deal with it. We're so obsessed with, am I looking good, or am I doing things right? And I think that we are, a lot of people tell me that I was my own worst enemy, that the
mm-hmm.
things that bothered me more, that they seemed like it wasn't a problem. But for me, I could tell you everything wrong with me where everybody else probably can tell you everything that's right with me. I can find
right.
every imperfection,
yeah.
and that's because I didn't love myself. I didn't know how to love myself. And then I can look at some people, like what you're saying, I can look at other people and say, like, wow, they're so confident. They're so confident in what they do or how they look or whatever. But I think it all depends on how we were trained and how it affected us. Because all our abuse is not the same in the same areas. Even though it's abuse, there's different categories of abuse. And so to me, to try to keep that stigma, I had to let that thing go because it was hard trying to please other people and I wasn't even pleasing myself. So I had to start realizing what was my value. What good are you to other people if you're not good to yourself?
Right. So where did my second question is, where did your OCD come from? Do you think it stemmed from your abuse? Because I have OCD. And I have a lot. But I do definitely have OCD, and I do realize that. It's not good for me. But and I realize it's worse for other people. Whether it's not good for me or not, it's not an issue. It's that the other people that it affects in my life, that it could possibly hurt them. And how would you take that in and explain that to somebody else who might not possibly understand the entire concept of being a survivor? How would you explain that?
Okay, because I can use OCD in different manners. Even people that hasn't went through abuse, some deal with OCD. My OCD was when we're talking about abuse, which is power and control, right? So
yes.
OCD is obsessive compulsive control. I mean, obsessive control compulsive disorder. It's a form of control. So you find something that you can control. That's basically what it is. And it took me years, not just going through psychology, but noticing that I was doing it. And I can be around certain people, and all of a sudden I will start picking up things off the floor, or I can go in the kitchen. If I see something turned the wrong way, I will obsessively wipe things down, or I would obsessively turn it in a direction that I needed it to be in, because in my mindset it had to be perfect. So that's where the OCD comes in. It's something that you want to control, and you do it obsessively, but you really don't have no control over it. You have no control of the actions that we use because, you know, OCD can be some people, they count things over and over, or some people, they wash their hands, or some people, they, you know, have to check the doorknobs, or they can't step on cracks. So other people have, you know, so there are so many different forms of OCD. My OCD, I realized, was, if I see something on the floor, and my mind says, no, my body say, I'm tired. I don't feel like picking that thing up. But it's out of place, right? So my mind says, no, go pick it up. You got to pick it up, because in my mind, I have to control something. And I realize when my anxiety gets so bad, my OCD is even worse. Because at this time, it's like my mind is all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'm in control, to control, and my OCD start kicking in. I hope that makes sense, because it is so real, and a lot of us have OCD and don't even realize.
So much sense. It makes sense to me as a person who goes through it, but the other one was your promiscuity. That's something that I would like to discuss with you, if you don't mind. When you said you went through your promiscuity, but you weren't promiscuous per se. Like, you didn't go out and sleep with anybody just because you just wanted to, but you went through a promiscuity phase. Can we discuss that? Can you discuss that with me a little further?
I feel that with my mom, that was one area that she didn't guide us, I would say, in. I think she was more so, because my mom got pregnant at the age of 14 with my sister. My sister got pregnant at the age of 15 with her child, and I think she was more so didn't want that pattern to continue. She never told me about anything about the, you know, how I teach my children, wait until you're married. My mom just wanted to make sure that I was on birth control. And so I realized, and sometimes we have to have a deeper understanding to what that does. Why did God create Adam and Eve, and that they can procreate? And what does that do when a man and a woman enters into each other? And so I feel like, and I say it in my book, I became a woman at a young age because I was dealing with a woman experiences as a child. So now I had these feelings. And I know a lot of y'all that have been molested feeling these cravings of, oh, I just want to have sex now. You know, that had never entered my mind until it was something that it was a need that needed to be fulfilled. So maybe mine wasn't doing drugs or drinking or all of that. It was the sex part. And I'm not going to say I had multiple partners, but it's like, it was like a high, like I did need to be fulfilled. And so even when I hear Carol talk about, or all of y'all talk about, then a certain age, and the molestation kept on until we was 18. And when I tell people that, people are like, wait a minute, you're 18, you're grown. Like, how are you still being molested? Because these same people that was molesting me at a young age, now it became like a sexual relationship. You know, it became like this is the person that now, however it connects soul ties, right. However it was, yeah. It was that I was accustomed to this person, I was used to this person, and now I'm, you know, having sex with this person, and it's okay. Even though I know it's wrong, but I have a fulfillment that needs to be fulfilled, and this person knows how to fulfill it. So that's basically
Okay, without you going on any further, I know there's other people on the panel that have questions. The only other question I have for you, and this is a very serious one for me, you talked about the forgiveness with your mother and your father. Now, I come from a very abusive mother, and I still love her. I can't explain it. I cannot explain it to my boyfriend. I forgive her. I really do. I forgive her. I forgive my father. And how do you explain that to somebody who doesn't understand that they went through abuse and that I'm allowed to forgive?
Right. I can say that because I deal with that now. Some people, because I came from an abusive marriage for 13 years, and these are my children's father. And so sometimes when we, you know, would talk or whatever, we can talk like friends. And people was like, but that person hurt you, so how can you have a relationship with that person? It was because I had to forgive him. And forgiveness is not easy. But sometimes we have to forgive even every person that molested me. I had to forgive them. I actually would go places and people say, you have deep hurt, you have deep wounds. And I didn't realize the deep wounds was my molestation. So God gave me an opportunity to reach out to everybody that had molested me, and it was probably about 7 people. And I reached out to every one of them and told them how they messed up my life and what they did to me. And I had to tell them, I forgive you. Now, not one person denied that they didn't do it. They just said, I apologize for doing it because, you know, they were saying probably I was young or whatever. But I understand forgiveness is a big key for us to even make it into heaven, because even when God is talking to us, he's saying, if you don't forgive your brothers and your sisters, or you don't forgive others, then I can't forgive you of things that you did. And so forgiveness is a big part of us, you know, living on earth. We have to forgive. And a lot of times I tell people, because I do know the Bible, I have to say, Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing. Because sometimes people don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I'm saying the act of what they're doing. I'm saying they don't realize how this is going to cause and affect harm in the long run of what they're doing.
But you were also talking earlier about the breakdown through forgiveness. You did mention that you had a breakdown through the forgiveness. Can you elaborate on that breakdown of that forgiveness?
Well,
or if you're willing to.
I went to a church, and they did a program. I ain't going to say a program. They did this demonstration of when Jesus Christ had to go to, he was getting ready to die. And they had the thorn, and they had an actual thorn. And we had to put that thorn on our head. And then they showed, like, the bruises are the nails in his hands, the nails in his feet. And so what we had to do was write on a piece of paper all the people that had harmed us and hurt us. And we took that piece of paper, and we had to tear up everybody's name and put it in this, I think it was like a basket or something, and literally say, I forgive this person. And forgiveness don't happen overnight. It's something that you have to work at, because majority of the time, like Carol said, we want to hurt these people. I want you to suffer like how I suffered. I want you to feel my pain.
That's right. Let's go, Carol.
That's why I give it to God. I figure I might be dangerous.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And that's where the forgiveness come in, because it will cause us to keep carrying on the same traits that our abuser
Correct.
Did to us. And we have to break the cycle. We have to break the cycle. And so sometimes it takes forgiveness. And, you know, forgiveness is not easy. Because I know when I was forgiven, I'm crying. I don't want to forgive. And I remember telling my aunt when my mom was sick, and I was going to be one of her caregivers. And I remember breaking down, and I had a nervous breakdown literally. And I told my aunt, and I said, but she has me in bondage. She has me in bondage. All she says, I'm crying. And my aunt said, she don't have you in bondage. You have your own self in bondage. Mm-hmm. And that made so much sense to me, because my mom was trying to figure out, was she going to live the next day? Was she going to wake up that next morning? She wasn't thinking about what she did to me when I was younger. She didn't even realize those things still affected me and my sister. But
yeah.
me, it was my own thoughts that kept me in bondage. It was my own thoughts that I kept playing over and over and over in my head. No, she never
yeah.
said she was sorry. But it may be in a lot of actions, because even before my mom died, she became like one of my best friends. You know, I realized
mm-hmm.
that my mom had my back when other people didn't, even when my dad didn't. She came to my rescue. Like, she was my fire. She was ready to kill people for me. So I had to reverse mm-hmm. that thing and learn forgiveness was
yeah.
the key in order to get here.
I believe that.
Okay,
and I have a great...
I'll tell you why. Maybe you can, you know, contact her afterwards. She'll give us a number or something that you can call. But I'll just simply quickly say, because then I want to get into the rest of your bio here, because she has so much, okay?
Yeah.
with me, I gave it to God because I couldn't do it, and I don't care. Yeah. I went to my brother once, and I said, hey, you, this is what you did to me when I was a kid growing up. Instead of being my big brother after I'd already been molested and kidnapped and raped and all other stuff, you couldn't be a big brother. You had to put your hands all over me, too. And he said, you liked it. Are you nuts?
Whoa.
Okay. So he didn't say he was sorry. And I was 9 years old, and he stopped touching me when I was, maybe 15, I guess it was, and sexually abusing me to the point where he raped me. So I have different feelings. So I had so much
right.
hatred where I had to give it to God, because I can't
right.
do it by myself. I feel, he better not come to my door. I'm sorry. That's the way I feel. You know, I don't even know where he is. But, everybody's different, okay? And my way of dealing with it was just simply handing it over to God, because he is the creator, and he is the one that is the strongest of all the angels. I don't want to deal with the fallen angel. I felt like the fallen angels already on earth, and they dealt with us, okay? That's the way I look at them, the monsters. And but it didn't shake my faith. I believe in
right.
God very much so. And he's my saving grace. That's the way it is. And it says in the Bible, by the way, also, too, because I know the Bible well, right from page one to the end, how many times am I supposed to forgive? It says 70 times 70.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I can take that and look at it one way, but I believe that God loves me, and I don't believe that people like Hitler or Jeffrey Dahmer or any of those
mm-hmm.
other people, those monsters, they're not going to be one of the 144,000 that are going to go on that skinny road to heaven. Am I going to be?
Exactly.
I don't know. But all I know is if he went up to heaven, I wouldn't want to be looking at him, okay, if any of them. I have to figure those things out. None of us know what happens until we die, all right?
Exactly.
Not completely.
That's true.
Okay, that's true. So let's get on here with what you have here, because you have so much, okay? You are the author of 6 books, a domestic violence educator, you're a survivor and an advocate. I'm the proud owner and founder of many businesses, highly educated, and due to my life history, I received an honorary doctorate degree in divinity, and you married a wonderful man. See, I don't know how to pick guys. I stay away from them now. My husband, my second one husband, he passed away. I did my wifely duties, all this other stuff, took care of him till the end, and I'm done, okay? I wear a
right.
wedding band. And if Mr. Wonderful walks by, okay, maybe I'll give him a chance. We won't go there. But anyway, my main business, which serves my purpose, is called Divine Destiny Ministry, a crisis center for women and children, okay? who are victims of domestic violence and human trafficking. I mean, you've done so much. You've done so much. I've traveled the world this year on a book tour called BAM, which you have in parentheses here, Black Lives Matter, and had the joy of not only being on many talk and radio shows, but also is featured for November's cover story on Purpose Magazine. So you have also here, and Deborah, I know you just dropped off. I think at times she needs to drop off and just regroup. But I want other people, if it's okay with you, to have your email address here, and maybe they can contact you. Is that okay? It's because it says here, please see. And I'm going to give it out. It's D as in Deborah, V-I-N-E, Destiny, D-E-S-T-I-M-Y, Ministry, okay, crisiscenters.com. Now, that's all one word until you get to the .com. Okay, I'll say that again quickly. D-V-I-N-E, Divine, that's, yeah, D, and then Vine, Destiny, Ministry, CrisisCenters.com. So what you've done is, with me personally, I'm going to tell you something. You got me to the point where I better start thinking about certain things, and we'll leave it at that because I don't have time to talk for 2 hours. This show is over almost. I mean, it's going very quickly. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing today. I know you have many businesses, but what are you doing as an educator, domestic violence educator? What are you doing?
What I did was I've always been one of those people that they said I was wise beyond my years, and kind of like what you were talking about, I heard when you said earlier you put your abuse on what you were going through in your track star. And when I heard you say that, and plus playing the piano, I'm like, oh my God, like she's telling my story. I realized now I'm doing this pandemic and a lot of kids, I realized that my school, my high school was my safe haven. So to not deal with a lot of the abuse that was going on, I did everything in from acting, from singing, from volleyball. I played volleyball all 4 years. I worked all 4 years of my high school life. And I think I'm just now realizing that was to keep myself from having to come home to my abuser, which was my mom. And so now what I do is, so I don't just like the experience of things. I like to know the knowledge, you know, about abuse. And so that's what I do now. It's so much abuse going on, and there's so many different forms of abuse. And I tell everybody, we all have a story, and sometimes my story may be your story. But I like to educate people on what domestic violence is and what abuse is, because sometimes people just look at domestic violence as a partner. And I'm like, no, it could be just like you talk about your brother. It was me and my brother. We would fight. You know, he passed away. Before he passed away, a year before he passed away, he called me a B-I-T-C-H. I wish you had died instead of my other brother. And it was a year later we were burying him. So I think God takes care of his own. But so
yes,
what I started doing was educating myself in everything, every aspect of my life, so that when people, not only if they're talking to me, but they're saying, oh, wow, she's educated in this field too. She don't just have the experience. She also has the education. And so that's what I did. I put myself through school until I was getting my doctorate in business administration as well as psychology, and it was too much. Everything was too much, doing dissertations, all this stuff. And finally, traveling around the world and talking to people and whatever, I was finally honored with an honorary doctorate of divinity, which means somebody that has been through so much crisis in their life and overcame them. That's really what it stands for. And so I'm like, wow, so I had to go through all this to get to where I am now. And so as a minister, I have Divine Destiny Ministry and Crisis Center. I have what I do is I have Intake Center. And I just got off the phone probably with some of my clients, because they don't just become my clients. They can talk to me because I'm relatable, because I was that survivor. I call us survivors. So I used to be that survivor. And so I talk to them. I do case management with them, even though my business only do the intake part. But I make sure that I'm, you know, do y'all have y'all resume? Somebody have a job? So I have so many connections, and I feel that God has given me so much favor with man that I care. And before we even started the show, I wanted to post on my Facebook, like, God, if you gave me all the money in the world, I will make sure that there was no homeless people out there. I will make sure that there was nobody else getting hurt and harmed, because I know by December the 31st, all of the people that we placed inside of a shelter for domestic violence, the funds are running out. And while everybody is sleeping, I'm over here trying to figure out, like, how can I help them, God? How can I be more of a blessing to them? So I, at the meantime, somebody just blessed me and sent a donation to my ministry, because we're taking, for December, we're taking up toys. Actually, on Monday, we're taking up toys that we're going to give to domestic violence survivors, as well as working with the elderly, because I have a business that's called Purposeful Outreach Community Center. And so we're giving diapers to the elderly, we're taking blankets to the homeless and socks and hygiene, things like that. And I guess that's why God called me to become a social worker. I have MSW in human services.
That's so true. That's so true. So many of us are drawn, you know, to social services. Of, no, I started out in the Lifers program, Scared Straight. I had to get something on my resume. And I always did that for over, I had to, and because I was eating too many malted balls in the dime store. They wanted to get rid of me. They put me in the candy section. You don't do that to a kid, all right? So anyway, they moved me down to Staples. They figured I won't eat the Staples, all right? So, but anyway, I moved along and started with the Robert Lifers program, and then to detention where I was paid. But I wouldn't have gotten in there because I had no education, really. I took off when I was 16 to get away from my brother, okay? And I was out on the streets, and I know what it's like to have the pavement under your head, okay? And I would sneak at times back home and go into the basement and sneak up into the house and get food and change clothing. My mother knew what she was doing, but she didn't try to stop me. No one stopped me. I had no boundaries. I had nothing. I was like, I don't know, bringing myself up, whatever. And I'd steal, you know, from the house food for some of my friends. They took care of me out on the street.
Right.
Is that nuts? They didn't let me do heroin. A lot of them, I had friends, two of them die in front of me. OD'd on heroin.
Wow.
And there wasn't anything I'd do about it. The cops were coming. I had to run. You know, what am I going to do? And I never, it always haunted me, all right? So, I mean, I've been out there. I know the streets. I know the life and all this other stuff. But later on, a church got a hold of me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they worked with, amen is right, they had over 200 people in the prayer group, and they said, you're a mess. And I said, yes, I am, because I was. And,
right.
And, you know, when you have so many people in a prayer group, they come from all walks of life. So there were counselors there, and they worked with me. And that's where my saving grace came, was from the church and from the counselors that worked there. They saved my life, because I wouldn't be alive today. There's too many things that happened, you know, so forth. And but it didn't help me to choose good husbands. You chose a godly man. That's what you said. And so
I didn't choose him. I didn't choose him. And the Bible talks about that. It says, when a man finds a wife, he finds a good thing and obtains favor. My husband found me when I wasn't even looking. He found me, and we've been married for 14 years. So let me get
well,
that
congratulations.
Found me. Thank you.
You know, it's so nice and refreshing, okay, to have someone come on the show who's happily married. Let me tell you something. That doesn't happen very often. So you are very, very blessed. You absolutely are. And I think that what happens is as we go along the way, we end up in different programs and we try to work different areas and so forth. I ended up working with kids and then I ended up working, you know, in a methadone clinic. It was the last place that I worked. I don't like methadone, but on the other hand, it did help some people, and I did get certified through Trenton and of the Board of Health, myself and a nurse. We took a lot of courses, and then we got our papers and so forth, our certifications. I mean, I've got certificates and certifications and all that stuff, but I panicked, okay? You have to understand, I'm a panic child, and my panic started when I was 9 years old and lasted until I was 49 years old. It turned into panic disorder. This is what can happen. People are listening out there all over the place. This is what can happen to kids. you can develop all different kinds of things. You get into alcohol and drugs. You get into, maybe you have terrible psychological problems, certainly emotional problems, and all these things that we have to address and try to heal from. And we didn't have meds, and back in the day when I started having my panic, I just started to drink because that was like killing the pain, I thought, you know. And,
right.
You know, so all these things, and then you turn into a cutter. You can be a cutter. I tried to commit suicide
right.
once. I have a nice scar on
right.
my wrist here. And, you know, and my mother was telling me, do it right, all this other stuff. I mean, the story is ridiculous,
wow.
okay, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote my book, and it's over with. And I look now today, took me years to get here, though, okay. I look
right.
back at my story, and it's sort of like I'm watching someone else who's going through all this horror. And
right.
today I'm where I'm at, and I thank God for that. Okay, I do. I still make mistakes. I'm not a perfect person. Never going to be.
Of course.
You know.
Of course.
You know, but
right.
today I do love myself. Okay, I can say that about me. Now with you.
Right.
You were driven, and the Lord took you all different places, and also with me, mostly with detention, but also with drugs and alcohol, and also with the emotionally disturbed with children, all which,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have certificates for and all the papers I need. But anyway, they were very strict that way. But anyway, and I didn't like that because I still had panic. I didn't want to do that stuff. Leave me alone. I can do the job, but not good enough. Yeah, going to school. Okay, all right. But, you know, so they paid for it. What do I care? So anyway,
right.
The point is this. So many of us, we end up in this type of work because
right.
we've been through so much. And somehow if we make it and we're strong enough and we have enough healing, we're able to help a lot of people. And also we have that thirst to continue on. I've worked with the homeless in New York City. I can't do that right now because of the COVID, okay?
Right,
because it,
right.
And I know what you're talking about. You spoke about the shelters, the domestic
mm-hmm.
violence shelters. And
mm-hmm.
and also the shelters for the homeless. I mean, let me tell you something. They're jam-packed full. They're
exactly.
finding abandoned buildings. And
yeah.
there's an awful lot of trouble out on the street just with the homeless, just trying to survive. And it is a horrific, horrific world that we live in right now. And I think we should all
right.
pray for it because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Do
oh,
you?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm going to 50. I tell everybody that. When I say that, people like, oh, you won't make it. I'm like, tomorrow's not promised to me. People dying so suddenly. I can tell you, I think it's been, they said it's like 105 million people died due to COVID. That's just the COVID
yeah.
cases for this year. That's
yeah.
not the people that died from wrecks or, abuse, domestic violence. My little cousin, she just passed
yes.
away from sex trafficking. Somebody just murdered her. We just buried her
mm-hmm.
last on the 11th. So it's a lot
I'm so
still
sorry.
Going on.
Yeah.
So no, tomorrow, thank you. So tomorrow is not promised to us. So I live day by day, hoping to see 50 years old. So.
God, isn't that awful? That's awful. What a
yeah.
way to live. Think about our children right now as we're speaking. Okay, Dr. Purpose, think of this. They're living in homes where they're being sexually abused or they're being physically, mentally, emotionally neglected, whatever, because we deal with all the abuses here in NASCA.
Right.
Okay. And all these children and all the, you know, every few minutes children are being just, you know, totally beaten. And the
right.
ones that are showing up, actually the people that call in, like the 1-800 for a child number, which I always advocate for people to call in and for that's a wonderful program too, Child Help, okay,
right.
wonderful program. They don't want to deal right next door or down the street at their own precinct because they might be revenge afterwards. They'll figure out who, you know, squealed on them in plain English. So you
exactly.
can always call the yeah. You can always call the 1-800 for a child number because they will get the right people there for you. And everything is anonymous. You don't have to give your name or anything like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's a good group right there. But the people who are mandated reporters, think for this for a second. All the schools are closed, right? They're closing down all over the place. Kids are not even seen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can't see the bruising. You can't see the malnutrition. You can't see the clothing. Maybe that hasn't been washed in 2 weeks or something. I'm just saying,
right.
Whatever. Right. You can't see that. And so those children, they have, and you can't see the sexual abuse unless you are walking funny. I could identify with that, by the way. Thank you very much. And Travis, I understand Staten Island. I was walking funny too, all right? So, my mother threw me a bottle of aspirin and a Vaseline jar. That's what I got. Look, what I'm saying to you is this, okay? The people are not calling in as much because the mandated reporters are not seeing, all this bruising and stuff. So the ones that end up in the hospital, I want people out there to listen to this, the ones that are ending up in the ER room are the ones that are so badly beaten and sexually abused, like you were just talking about. And some of them don't make it, and some of them do. And then they go back maybe sometimes to the same place from which, they ran from or they came from or whatever, you know. So I'm asking people out there, in urban areas, every fourth or fifth house, there's something going on. These are studies that have been done, and I've found verification of that. It can be physical, it can be mental, it can be emotional, it can be sexual abuse, whatever.
Right.
Or just plain neglect, okay? Neglect can cover many areas. And so to keep your eyes open and call for help for a kid because we need you. And when I say we, I'm not a kid anymore. But we, the little child inside still cries, we need you because no one's helping us. We don't have a voice, okay?
That's right.
We have to become the voice for the kids who have no voice. So that's my platform right there, and I'm not going to say any more. We have exactly 4 minutes left, maybe even a little bit less. My clock on my computer is off, and I don't know why. I'm very smart in some ways, but computers and I don't get along a lot of times. All right, but anyway. it's crazy. But what I need for you to do is, say it's 3 minutes or whatever, whatever it is, please leave us with some hope for people who are listening. There was a big amount of people tonight that were listening that didn't call in, but they were listening on their computers. What would you say to them?
First of all, let me address the children. Yes, the children, we always seem like we don't have a voice. And I thank God for Children's Protective Services or whatever state that they have Children's Protective Services in. And because, like you say, yes, we can call in anonymous and we have to speak up for the children. And I would say we have to advocate. Like, we have to be their alum or be their voice. Because a lot of children, they don't say things, but we can tell by their actions. And, know who that child is. Know who your child is, because it could be your very child that's through abuse or sexual abuse, and you don't even realize that they're going through it. So have conversations with your kids. Be open with your kids. Like I am very open with my children. And far as women that are going through domestic violence, I would say get out. Find a way out. There are so many numbers, even my number, that they can call on, because there's always, God always give us a way of escape. You don't have to live that life. Know your worth and know that God has called you for a purpose, and your purpose is always not to be somebody's punching bag. So know that you have value and that you're worthy to be here.
That's right, and I thank you for that. And, I'll tell you what, we do have a contact list. I'm the night owl. I stay up many times on the phone until 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. Yes, I am.
Wow.
And there's a couple of us that do that. Because in the AM, everything seems scarier and worse. We know this. And it does. So, we have that too, the contact list. You can find that right on the front page of the website. That's www.naasca.org. That's naasca.org. As I was just saying this, another phone call has come in. My phone is busy all the time, too. I don't recognize this number, but I will get off in a second because the show is over. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. You are a family member now. You can come on anytime you want, Monday through Friday. Just look at, if you have time. If you have time, my God. And you feel like you want to be on the panel, Just call in.
Okay, cool. I love that. I thank God for the
yeah.
And I thank God that y'all decided to allow me to come on to be a guest and now as a panelist. So yeah, I moved up a little bit.
Well, you're a wonderful guest, and I can see that you really touched Deborah. That was very, very good. Okay, I've got 10 seconds. I got to wrap the show up. So thank you so much. I hope to hear from you soon, and be safe, okay? Be safe.
Too.
God bless you. God bless you.
God bless
you. Bye-bye.
Love Talk Radio.
Okay.